welcome to the Pick Six podcast. I'm Sam McEwen, coming back from Cleveland, where I visited my wife's family. That's Evan Bland, who's going out to Colorado very soon. And this is I guess the moving day for both of us. I just got back. You're going out. Nebraska still doesn't have an athletic director. They might not have an athletic director for another week or two. You just never quite know. Evan, how you doing?
Hey, Sam. Doing all right. I was thinking the other day about how, you know, we in the media, there are certain vacation windows that we have. And forever, July has been one of those for sports writers, people like us. But how crazy it's been this year when you add in the CWS and the Senior Open and, you know, the swim trials. There's been just, it feels like that. And then the Big Ten Media Days, of course, is earlier this year than it has been in a while, that 22nd and 23rd. Feels like that vacation window is shrinking a little bit every year, but we're trying to cram some in here. So that's good.
Yeah, we managed it okay. You know, the AD thing is what threw me for a curve. I didn't anticipate, you know, having to kind of delve into that this July. I figured if there was going to be something done, it was going to be after this season. But Nebraska wanted to move on that. Now we'll have an update on that in a minute. I talked to Ronnie Green right before we left. And you know, that timeline is still kind of holding true. He figured it'd be a couple of weeks from the time that I talked to him, which puts us at a timeline of next week. So we'll talk a little bit about the athletic director search. We're going to talk about Nebraska football and basketball recruiting. The Husker football team is, they've missed out on a few guys. They still are in on a few guys. The basketball team, this is a big month, obviously, for basketball recruiting. This is right around that time when you start to see players start to commit from really this moment through, you know, August, September is when basketball players start to commit. Sometimes they commit in October around signing day, but this is the period of time when that happens. So we haven't necessarily talked a ton about basketball recruiting in the past. not to knock Doc Sadler or Tim Miles, but oftentimes things were a little bit more of a slow cook. With this staff, it's very different. Obviously, they added a player Thursday and lost a player to the NBA draft in Delano Banton. We'll talk a little bit about that. Nebraska baseball team faces a momentous weekend with the Major League Baseball draft. It affects a lot of different aspects of their team, not only current players who I think, you know, Evan expects to leave, but also some recruits. And whether those recruits get drafted or not will greatly affect Nebraska baseball down the line. So it's actually a big day, big week for Nebraska baseball, big weekend. Draft starts on Sunday, so we'll talk a little bit about that. A little bit about NIL. You know, most people are kind of caught up on where those things are at this moment. So we'll chat a little bit about NIL as we often do. And maybe we'll hit on a few other topics as well. But we'll start with the Nebraska Athletic Director search. This is a relatively good place to start. We're 2 weeks in to the search process. Where are we at here? On Tuesday, 4 days after Bill Moose retired, I talked to UNL Chancellor Ronnie Green about a timeline, and he said it was going to be about a few weeks from then, which puts us at next Tuesday, next week. Not real surprised they didn't get somebody this week. I think maybe they had a priority candidate. We can discuss in a minute whether that was crucial to land that person or not. In Jamie Pollard, I think he was probably really high on the list, but obviously said no or didn't even respond necessarily to the overtures. I'm not sure exactly how to put that, but they're kind of there with that. And so we don't have an athletic director at this moment. I think there's some internal candidates, obviously, they're working through. They're using a search committee. That's part of it as well. And I think that's kind of where it stands. Evan, I'm going to let you kind of chat a little bit about, you know, everything that's transpired since I left, and then I'll riff off of that based on what I've heard and kind of what I can share.
Honestly, I mean, since your interview with Ronnie Green last week, Sam, it's been radio silence, really. There have been no additional updates or reports beyond what Jamie Pollard said on one of the local podcasts that he went on. And you know, that was interesting in and of itself in that you know, 20 years ago, the AD at Iowa State saying that the job there was essentially more desirable than the job at Nebraska would have sounded ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But when you look at how he's built things out there, it makes a little bit more sense. So it's been quiet. And, you know, I think that's a story kind of on its own too, because of the optics of the thing, where if you're Nebraska and you're buying out essentially Bill Moose's last year and a half at the school, the assumption would be that you have somebody else in mind. And maybe that assumption is wrong. And maybe it's, they just want to move on because he was ready to finish out his contract. But it does, I think, kind of add to whoever they hire at this point, you know, especially if it goes another week or two, there's going to be the optics of, well, was this guy really their first choice? And why did it take so long? You know, fair or not. And I think ultimately it doesn't really matter, right? I mean, you look back, you know, in a year or two from now, it doesn't matter how long it took them, as long as they get the guy that they wanted and a guy that can lead them forward. But I do think it's fascinating. The longer we go, the more that kind of comes up as well. Where was this eventual successor on the list for Nebraska? How is that going to be perceived nationally is fascinating.
It is. You know, I think what I can kind of impart at this moment is that, you know, there were probably some candidates that were pretty high early. Certainly, I think Pollard is a natural thought, although I don't believe that Jamie Pollard was part of the 2012 search, which zeroed in on Shane Ankhorst very quickly. And I don't really think he was that much a part of the 2017 search, which I think had Jeff Long as a finalist and obviously hired Bill Moose. And so I think there's reasons why Pollard is often thought of, but not necessarily plucked. Reasons why, you know, he's probably could get, you know, would have been in theory in line for other jobs at other places, but hasn't necessarily gotten those. You know, if he's able to turn his success in hiring Matt Campbell into a raise for himself at Iowa State, more power to him. He is the one who hired Campbell, and he's the one who hired Fred Hoiberg, which I think gave Iowa State a lot of good memories there for about 5 years. Hoiberg left, and Campbell might leave too one day. But you know, Pollard has given joy to that fan base. I would have been surprised, I think, if he had been the eventual hire for a variety of reasons. One of which is, do you want to bring in somebody who has accomplished a lot at another school and essentially wants to say, well, at Iowa State, we did this, at Iowa State, we did that, when the prevailing opinion within the Nebraska athletic department is, outside of basketball, doesn't really matter what people think of Iowa State. And I know that's a tough thing to say about Iowa State football, which is clearly a better football program right now than Nebraska is. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm not sure that was necessarily going to be the best move. I'm not sure that Pollard would have viewed this as his destination job. And so I think what you're looking for in the role is somebody who you're kind of calling up to the majors, somebody who's really motivated to do a really great job at Nebraska, without it being something along the lines of, well, you know, I've already done a great job over here, so what I'm going to come and do here is just kind of this and this. And I think you want to find somebody who, as you know, Ronnie Green said, is in the prime of their leadership. And you also want to find somebody who doesn't feel entitled to the job or doesn't feel as if they have some sort of secret code that understands the place. You want somebody who's really going to come in and listen and take the time to sort of shape the operation. And then simultaneously be somebody who's good with the media. And I think the person I'm describing on some level has the outward facing qualities of a Bill Moose and the inward facing qualities of some previous athletic directors Nebraska might have had, including Shane Ankhorst. And I know people hear that and they kind of shudder a little bit, but there were processes that he put in place. What he wasn't great with is he didn't connect with the coaches very well, and he didn't connect with the media. But you ask other people within that department whether the operation was running smoothly while he was there, and I think the answer was yes, it was. And the student athletes liked him a lot, and that they weren't faking that. Student athletes barely knew Bill Moose, so there was a difference in the way that they approached those roles. We know that Pollard's out. We know that a former University of Nebraska president is out. That doesn't surprise me that much. I think that was a person that may have been interested in the job at one point, but isn't now. And so it goes. There's still obviously internal candidates to consider. I still think there's some decent group of five names out there that may not necessarily put a lot of ripple on the radar initially, but would be very effective people in those roles. You're looking, I think, for somebody a little bit younger. And, you know, the name that popped up really early that seemed to generate a lot of heat, and I thought it was generating a lot of heat, was Ed Stewart, who's the associate commissioner of the Big 12. And, that's cooled down. I think that'd be the best way to put that. And that could be that, you know, he feels like he's got a really good chance of being the commissioner of the Big 12, which, okay, you know, commissioners, with the exception of Greg Sankey, have not generally been hired as the associate commissioner moving up. The ACC hired Jim Phillips. The Big Ten hired Kevin Warren. Prior to that, Jim Delaney was the commissioner of another conference. The Pac-12 hired, I can't even remember the guy that works for the casino, right?
Yep.
So if the Big 12's solution to hiring its commissioner is to hire the person who's been there for a long time, that does happen. And there's nothing wrong with that happening. I'm just saying that the current track record has not been to do that. It's been, you know, bring somebody, you know, from outside in. So we'll see if that happens. But I still think it's probably going to be, you know, 3 to 5 days. It could be longer than that. I think they, you know, Nebraska wants to hire somebody who is stable for the long term and can maybe withstand a few different things. I think we've taken this athletic director job and said, each athletic director only gets one football coach. And if they only get one football coach, then they're gone. And that coach doesn't work. They're out of here. Well, you look at Jamie Pollard. He didn't get one football coach. He got three. Gene Chizik left. Paul Rhodes seemed like an inspired hire, but it fell apart over time because he didn't recruit very well. And Matt Campbell was his third coach. And look how well that's turned out.
Right.
So I think you've got to get out of this cycle of, well, you get one football coach and that's all you get unless you're Tom Osborne. Then you can be here for as long as you want. And I think they have to figure out a way to keep an athletic director above and beyond whether or not that football coach has success.
Yeah. I think the other conversation that's interesting to me too, Sam, is the the insider-outsider conversation. So, like, how important is it to Nebraska to have an AD with ties to the university? You know, the last two hires have been what you would call outside hires, with Sean Eichhorst, with Bill Moos. Both had their, as you outlined, their positives and then their shortcomings. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Tom Osborne before that was the ultimate insider sort of AD hire. And so it's just fascinating to kind of see, like you said, Ed Stewart, obviously former Husker player. Garrett Classy, the interim AD, has been here a couple of years. I guess he would be kind of a blend of those two things. You know that he's been here long enough to understand what's going on, but he's not necessarily from here. So that part fascinates me. And then, you know, you talk about a guy who they're looking for in the prime of his or her leadership. Doesn't it just feel more important than usual, given not just the state of Nebraska athletics, but college athletics at large, where you have this massive changing landscape with NIL, and you have transfer portal, and you have media rights that are changing and fluctuating all the time. Like, this job for the first time in forever is about more than just the individual sports teams. It's about more than just the university. It's about being proactive and looking at trends in athletics at large. And I think that's something that you have to look at too. It can't be necessarily what have they done in the traditional sense, but where have they been visionaries? Where have they been proactive on certain things? And I think you have to factor that in as much as anything when you're looking at these candidates.
I agree. I think you have to consider, as I've said before, athlete forward candidates. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I put it. Oh, my camera. Athlete forward candidates. candidates who understand what it means to create an atmosphere that's really, that makes student athletes want to come here, stay here, and excel while they're here. And you have to create an atmosphere that brings all that together. And if you think about really good leaders in athletics today, you're seeing people who have a really, have the ability to blend, you know, get the really talented people on board, get a team mindset in place, simultaneously create an atmosphere where you love so well that you can hold people to a super high standard. I think in the past, coaches and even ADs were like, well, the kids are gonna put up with it because they have to, because that's the culture. And now they don't have to put up with it. And actually, the pendulum swung so far in the other direction that there are times when student athletes almost come up with, well, this is just wrong. And it's not wrong. Like, it's really benign. You know, I think we've seen some situations where athletes have transferred from one school to another, and you're just kind of like, okay, like it doesn't, it seems like maybe the slight that you're feeling there. The one I think of a lot was the Clemson quarterback who went to Missouri because, you know, he wasn't going to beat out Trevor Lawrence. And I thought, I'm like, you know, you're going to miss out on a national championship, which he did, to go to a really mediocre team with a coach who's on a hot seat, just to say, you know, you started at quarterback when you're probably going to be needed at some point in Clemson's season, which he would have been. Chase Bryce came in and kind of saved that game against Syracuse a couple of years ago. But there are moments when you wonder, like, what's going on here with some of these student athletes? Whereas, you know, 20 years ago, you never would have done that. Like, student athletes just put up with a lot of crap. They still put up with that, but they don't have to do it as much. They can kind of walk away. They can kind of just walk away. And so you need athletic directors and coaches who really understand that you have to love these athletes really well and care about their whole being, or otherwise you're not probably going to maximize your potential. And that's not just the money piece. People think it's all about NIL and about making money. It's not. It's about mental health. It's about getting them in the classes they want. You know, a lot of times in the past, it used to be, well, here's the classes you're going to take because we need you for football, or we need you for this. Here are some classes you can take that make our life easier. And I think that's not the answer. The answer is to maximize the experience of the student athlete. And Nebraska is really good at that, incidentally. They have people in their program who care about that and maximize it. So, but you need an athletic director who really cares about it. And I Bill Moose was really good to me, and I really enjoyed him just an immense amount. And I have a lot of respect for him too. But you know, Bill, even a year ago was like, well, they start playing these players, this old boy is going to go back to the ranch. And like that attitude, you know, you can understand why he wanted to retire. He wants out. You know, he understands that the landscape is changing and maybe it isn't necessarily his favorite one. Ditto with Barry Alvarez. Alvarez isn't going to say it, but he's not ready to be done working. You notice that? Alvarez is going to the Big Ten. Well, there's a reason for that. He's ready. He's ready to get out of it. So I think the same of Moose. He's ready to move on to some other chapter. It won't surprise me if Bill is a consultant somewhere, but I still think it's going to be a young candidate. Won't surprise me if it's a group of five type guy or woman. Won't surprise me if it's, wouldn't shock me if it was Garrett Classy. Classy's got a lot of positive things on the ledger. It would surprise me a little bit if it was someone else within Nebraska's operation. And at this point, it would surprise me if it was Ed Stewart. Although, again, if they can get him, you know, I think he's a really interesting choice. Now, he's been working for the Big 12, so he's worked with a lot of football coaches. He hasn't, you know, worked necessarily within the athletic department to, you know, deal with academic, you know, like getting all those things in place. I don't know. But I think he would catch up really quickly and be a good candidate too. So it's an interesting moment. Interesting moment.
Very much so. Yeah, Classy is interesting. I don't know if you noticed this, Sam, but Jordan Burroughs, the Olympic wrestler from Nebraska, had a going away thing down in the rail yard just this week, and Garrett Classy was down there, sending him off. So, you know, for a guy who's been spearheading their NIL legislation, who moved Nebraska's media rights in house from their partnership with Learfield IMG, he's doing everything he can to be considered. Like he's invested in the community. You can tell he's invested in the area. He's around all the time. That's an interesting one, I think, going forward. If I agree, like if they go internal, that he would be the guy. He's making it difficult, even in what he's doing these last couple of weeks. He was the one who got to announce Will Bolt's extension, last week too. So for an interim guy, he's done quite a bit, and it's kind of fascinating to watch too.
I'm with you. The one thing I think about Garrett, no entitlement thing. And I cannot tell you how important that is in this moment in time, especially at Nebraska, because there are people who take Nebraska for granted a little bit. There just are. And I'm not necessarily talking to people who work there, but he's not one of them. He does not take for a second for granted anything. He was very hard worker, humble guy, shows up to stuff. He's the guy at Rutgers in that, lonely AD's box, with a couple other people instead of Moose. I'm like, this guy's a worker. He'll show up. And I appreciate that. I appreciate the people who don't have any kind of, they're not in it for the name or the glory or for the, for the cool private plane rides. They're in it because they're grinders. They've worked their way up. They've built their resume the right way. So that's notable. And Nebraska could use somebody like that. Moose was that at one point in his career. I think he was in more of an emeritus phase here. And I, of course, just did not jibe with the coaches and the media. And that wasn't helpful. I want to mention this before we go on to recruiting. You wrote a story and I appreciated you doing it. The director's cup was not really on until recently. They decided to do it after the fact at the end. But Nebraska had its highest finish in 5-6 years, right?
Yep. Highest finish in 5 years. After having two of their worst 2 years in cup history, and it goes back to the early 90s, and then the pandemic wiped out the one last year. But I think it was 38th. I don't have it in front of me right here the second, but they got some contributions from some places that they normally don't, women's golf and
swimming.
What's that?
Swimming.
Swimming, yep.
Swimming and diving.
And women's golf, that was big.
Abigail Napton. They owe a lot to her. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
They probably finish in the low 40s if it isn't for Pablo Morales, his team, and more to the point, Abigail and a couple of those. A lot of it was swimming. Swimming and bowling. Bowling winning the national title versus finishing third is worth points.
Right.
But a lot of credit to women's golf, to women's swimming. Some of the smaller sports got them home.
Yep. Track and field did well. But you usually write that, and I always appreciate kind of the 30,000 foot view that the Director's Cup brings us, because it's a nice tidy way to look back and say, okay, who contributed, and we just kind of outline some that did, and then you say, well, football gave 0 points, men's and women's basketball gave 0 points. You can kind of go down the list and see. It's just a very, objective way to kind of evaluate how some of the programs have done when it's the points again are based on getting to the postseason and then how you do there. That was interesting. And it's always done with the caveat that the schools with a lot of the niche, maybe Olympic sports do well. I mean, this was only the second time ever that Stanford didn't win the thing. Then they finished second to Texas this time around. But I mean, you look at the history of Nebraska in that cup, top 10 in the 90s, pretty regularly into the 2000s, there was this kind of steady, slow erosion of some, where they would finish. And so for the first time in a while, there was some positive news. I mean, they finished higher, obviously not where they want to be. But it's always fascinating to see. And then in the Big Ten context, Nebraska was right in the middle. And I think that's just as telling because most of these schools offer similar sports. You know, obviously some differences here and there, but Nebraska finishing 7th out of 14, you know, it feels like a pretty accurate barometer of where they stand overall in their conference right now.
Yeah, I would say I agree with you. I agree with that. I think they're, this is a tougher league. Some of these schools have more sports. Michigan does.
Some do.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're never going to catch Michigan in this thing. I think it's really hard to do that. I guess you could, but it's hard. Again, when I'm looking at the standings, it only shows the spring sports, which I'm not sure where to access at this very moment, the other ones, but you know, I mean, Nebraska's at 35th. That's where they were. They're ahead of Wisconsin and ahead of Penn State.
Yeah.
It surprises me. They're not usually ahead of those schools. Don't seem to be anyway. So, yeah. I mean, I think you got to tip your cap a little bit to the work that some of the smaller schools did. We didn't cover what was going on with the Nebraska diving program well enough. You know, that's an error on our part. I mean, they were very, very good. And Abigail, you know, my wife DVRs every single Olympic trial event possible and then watches them all the way up until the Olympics because competition is competition, right? And so, I mean, Abigail did a great job at the U.S. trials. Didn't make it, but it was one of the best in the nation. And by proxy, being one of the best divers in this nation means you were one of the, you know, 30 best in the world. So they did a great job there and they deserve a lot of kudos. All right, going on to recruiting. Let's go to college football recruiting here for a minute. Big decision against Nebraska on Sunday, James Mons on the 4th of July. The 4th of July became like the official holiday in which guys would announce commitments. My goodness, there was like 100, it seemed like. And not a great trend. No, not my favorite holiday. So it's not the worst day you could do it. The worst day you could do it is Thanksgiving. But not a great trend to have 100 of those on 4th of July, but it seems like that's what's going to happen. Nebraska loses out on James Mons to Indiana.
Yeah, they do. You know, that's a big one. They were in on him for a long time. He obviously came and took the official to Nebraska and considered him highly. We've talked about this on here before about how his status as a legacy recruit is somewhat overblown in that. Yeah, his great uncle Wander Mons was a star here back in the day, but you know, you look at his family lineage, he's had relatives playing at, you know, high level college football programs around the country. So Nebraska wasn't the only place that can lay claim to him as sort of a legacy recruit. But yeah, I mean, when you lose out to a guy like that at a position where they're trying to stock up at defensive back, and then you lose him to a conference rival in Indiana, who also took one of your best, one of your top DB prospects a couple cycles ago, and Taiwan Mullen. Yeah, that stings. And when you look at kind of the status of their class overall, 7 commits at this point. You know, Scott Frost has said it's going to be a smaller class anyway, might be in the 14, 15, 16 type range. So you know, miss that you have is a little bit more under the microscope because you're not recruiting as many guys. And so it definitely hurts for him. But, you know, you kind of move on to the next thing. And I think this isn't necessarily totally related, but what fascinates me about this recruiting class too, Sam, and how small it is that when you look at Nebraska's roster, it essentially does have 3 freshman classes right now. You had the actual true freshmen who are here, you have the previous class, which are true freshmen because they didn't have 2020 count against them. And then we think back to the 2019 group, and we've had this discussion on this podcast before about how they redshirted almost everybody in that 2019 class. I think there were 3 players that played more than 4 games in 2019. And so you have this logjam of freshman status student athletes and players in there. It's really kind of coming home to roost. And of course you can't predict that, right? If you're the staff, like, you could never have guessed that the pandemic would throw a wrench into everything, but it creates a really odd dynamic where you're so backloaded with freshmen, that it's really making recruiting kind of an uphill battle in this cycle.
It is. I think there's two ways to look at it. Certainly the numbers are smaller than you would like. That said, I don't know exactly why that would necessarily work against Nebraska getting higher rated players. In other words, the players that they really wanted.
Sure.
Because, you know, in theory, if the numbers are smaller almost everywhere, then better players should trickle down to some of the middle tier schools. And Nebraska's always recruited really well for its weight. Now, I'm not saying that those recruits have always panned out. We'll talk about that in a minute. But they've always recruited really well for their weight. And what I found in this particular cycle is that Nebraska's not necessarily getting all the top guys on the board. I mean, I think Landon Sampson was a guy that if he had committed on June 4th when he visited, they would have taken that commitment. He ends up going to South Carolina. James Mons was a corner that Nebraska wanted quite a bit, and he chose Indiana, in part because a guy that chose between Indiana and Nebraska 2 years ago, Taiwan Mullen, chose Indiana. And so there's been some misses along the way in the sense that they'll bring guys in, and then those guys decide they want to go somewhere else. Nico Davier is going to Arkansas, his hometown school. McClelland out of Oklahoma has kind of been elevated to a, you know, four-star guy. Jaron Kanick, not coming here, most likely. Might, I guess. He came here for the spring game, but, you know, he's not coming here. That was a guy that they wanted quite a bit, that they thought could really help them out. Now he's, I don't know, has he committed yet? I'm sure he has.
No.
No, he hasn't committed yet. But, you know, he visited Alabama and some other schools. So, like, you know, he's kind of moved into a different echelon of recruit that, you know, Nebraska wanted him. They didn't get him. I think there's probably been a receiver or two along the way that was a little interesting. If they get Jalen Marshall out of Overland Park, great. If they don't, I think they might not get anybody from that city again, which is a little surprising to not land someone out of Kansas City. And so, you know, they didn't want everybody there. I get all that, but there's guys that they offered too. They offered like five or six guys. We're just kind of reaching, I think, a point where like it's tough to say this is exactly how Nebraska wanted it, even if the numbers are what they are. Now there's some scuttlebutt that Hayden Schwartz, who's a very polished, almost finished product defensive end out of Jacksonville, Florida, out of the Bulls school, might be coming Nebraska's way. He's a really good high school player. Again, he's probably closer to a finished product than a lot of guys are. He knows how to play the game, knows how to, you know, scrape and play through guys as opposed to trying to run around them, plays with leverage, all those other things. But what you hope you get in a player like that is somebody who's even got a higher ceiling than you imagine. His floor is pretty high, but we'll see where his ceiling goes. There's a name. Jaden Mangum is a name to keep in mind. He was an athlete that visited late in the process. There's a bunch of offensive linemen in the mix. Valen Erickson visited a long time ago. John Pastor, Jake McCua. I'm probably forgetting somebody. So, you know, it's an imperfect process, Evan. Certainly it's not perfect. It's not exactly where everybody wants it to be. They're doing okay. But I think in the future, they want to get guys that are higher on their board. Again, the four kids from Omaha aren't going to Nebraska, and they're all really good players. Like, they're all good players. I think Nebraska would have taken commits from all four, and three of four at least. And the three of four would be, if you get Caden Helms, do you take Michael Riley Ducker? If you get Michael Riley Ducker, do you take Caden Helms? That kind of thing. It wouldn't be that they didn't like all four players. I think they might have taken all four of them, and they didn't get any of them. And that's tough. One of the guys they got is, and again, Jake Applegate, I think, is going to end up being a good player because they get good players out of Southeast. But Jake Applegate is a guy that they were going to get when they offered him a scholarship, and then they didn't. Mm-hmm.
It feels to me like this is a reflection of kind of the greater urgency now for Nebraska to win games this year. Like, it feels like, you know, we talk about the kind of the waning attendance at the Big Red Blitz last month, and, you know, the smaller crowds there. You talk about how Nebraska has these mini plans out for tickets this fall, which is a rarity this late, especially in before the season. Usually those tickets are snapped up. And so there's talk about, will the sellout streak continue? That's been a popular topic lately. You see,
yeah, mini plans out there. The mini plans aren't out there for no reason, right?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, these mini plans are out there. And then you have 7 commits for Nebraska. They're not getting the guys at the top of their board that they've been accustomed to doing under Scott Frost these last few years. The in-state kids, whether that's circumstantial or otherwise, are not interested this year. So it really does. It feels like Nebraska's got to show something to stir up some interest. I mean, 12-20 has been bandied about a lot this offseason, Nebraska's record under Frost here. And it really does. It feels clear cut. Like this is the year they got to show something to generate that interest, because all the other stuff is there. Like, we're not going to be talking about culture this year. We're not going to be talking about continuity this year. We're not going to be talking about, some of the support structures. NIL is strong. Academics are strong. The facility is coming. Like, all the stuff around Nebraska is sound and good enough to compete, but the on-field results just haven't been there. And I think you're starting to see this waning interest. And man, it feels just, maybe it's oversimplifying it, but you got to make a bowl game. You got to show a reason for people to get excited about what's to come with this program in the next few years.
I think it's that. I think some of it, and this will seem counterintuitive when I say it out loud, some of it is Nebraska is being a little bit more selective in its recruiting.
Sure.
And as a result, they're not necessarily pursuing high 3, low 4-star guys that they could probably get, but are academic question marks, that kind of thing. Or, guys that have decided who have changed their minds 2 or 3 times. Like, there is a kind of player who you can identify and say, that's a good player, but they're a little bit drama, right? Like, on athletic ability alone, Maurice Washington was easily one of the 20 or 30 best recruits in the 2018 class. I mean, he's just marvelous athletically. There were a lot of teams that did not recruit him. They just weren't going to recruit him because they knew, that he bounced around a lot. There was a little bit of a red flag with a couple, with Jaden Francois. That's a good example. I mean, the guy gets to the signing day and he doesn't know what he wants to do and doesn't know what decision he wants to make. And again, those are 4 stars that a lot of schools are like, those are good players, but we can get a comparable player who's maybe rated a little lower that doesn't come with, we're not sure, like the uncertainty that a player who's no idea what they want to do on signing day comes with. And when you, the Athletic, Max Olson, who we both know, wrote a good piece on overachievers and underachievers in recruiting. And Nebraska is one of the biggest underachievers, not the biggest underachiever, but they're one of the biggest underachievers. I think over the years, Nebraska has had a habit of turning in what I would describe as really good recruiting classes that don't necessarily translate to really good football teams, because the classes include players like Elijah Blades, who is on his 4th team and is, because he was going to go to Nebraska, then he didn't make it, then he went to JUCO, then he committed to Oregon, then he left Oregon, then he went to A&M, and now I think he's transferring somewhere else.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Like, Elijah Blades looks really good on a recruiting resume, but he didn't ever play here. And he's also bounced around a lot. And, Cam Jones, for example, he was a really good recruit in the 2018 class, but he's like a bit player at SMU. Maurice Washington. Like, you can rack up some really impressive players, but how does that actually, translate to playing, winning football? And I think that's the part where Nebraska's tripped up. Whereas the overachievers in Max's group are the top three are Iowa State, Iowa, and Wisconsin.
Yep.
In other words, they're taking kids from the Midwest who probably aren't rated as high as they should be and turning those kids into players who are better than other players elsewhere who had higher star ratings, but yet bounce around a lot. Like that's the essence of the operation.
Isn't it?
Nebraska goes out and signs these great recruiting classes, which are great for us for traffic and great for recruiting sites, but don't necessarily translate into sort of elite success on the field because you're not necessarily getting guys who fit your program or fit a lot of programs.
Right.
They're wild card picks. They just are.
The geography pattern intrigues me. I mean, you mentioned Iowa State, Iowa, Wisconsin are the three top overachievers. Northwestern's fifth, Oklahoma State sixth, Kansas State seventh, Indiana 10th. I mean, that's a ton of Midwestern, you know, Midwest teams that are recruiting locally and developing. And Nebraska was that team for a long time, getting people from the area, making them better. And then you look at the overachiever or the underachievers would be Nebraska, but there are a lot of Midwest teams there too. Illinois hasn't been good. You know, Arkansas is number one on that list. Kansas is on that list. I think it really kind of just accentuates this idea that if you're not from a talent-rich area, like development's even more important. There are not a lot of Southern schools on this list. There aren't a lot of West Coast schools on this list in these hotbeds because those guys come in and there's so much talent in that area that at some point you can't help but have some success. But that's one trend that I've just noticed is look at all these Midwest schools. Development is so crucial that if you have it, you know, things are going to work out pretty well for you. Maybe not national title well, but bowls and contending for conference titles and things. And man, if you don't have it, Arkansas's number one, they've bottomed out. Rutgers has not been good. Maryland, everyone knows about Nebraska and Illinois. Like that to me is kind of the takeaways. If you're a Midwest team and you can't develop, you are in a lot of trouble.
Yes. Yes. I think that's a pretty good deal. I agree with you. On to hoops recruiting.
What do you think of the signing or the commitment of Alonzo Verge?
I think it can make Nebraska a better team than they would have been if Delano Banton had stayed. And that's not a knock on Banton. I think there are certain things about his and I could be wrong that the pieces that Nebraska added this year would have accentuated Banton's talent in a way that made it obvious why he is so coveted for his skill set. That the way to put it. I thought in last year's team that it could not maximize the things that Banton was really good at. He's got great court vision. He's a really good passer. You know, I just don't know that Nebraska had all the pieces to make Banton look really as good as he can if he's on a team with 40% three-point shooters. So, you know, if you put Banton in a situation where he's kicking the ball out to guys that really know how to knock down shots and are really good at that, he probably looks different a little bit. But what Verge gives him is somebody who can get all the way to the hoop and can finish there. And there are things that Banton can't do because he's 6'9", and one of the things he can't do is go under people and like up and unders and all those things are harder for a 6'9 guy to do. The thing that a 6'9 guy ought to be able to do is rise above a shorter defender and hit jumpers. And guess what? Banton did not do very well. He didn't do that. That was part of an issue. Like when you're 6'9, the thing you should be able to do is hit jumpers over a 6'6 or a 6'4 guy. That's not something Banton was very good at. It just wasn't. He was a good finisher at the rim. He at times was able to hit a mid-range jumper. He was a 24% three-point shooter. And it's just, So the things that his height should have afforded him, he wasn't always that good at. With this guy coming in, he can get to the cup. He can get all the way to the rim. I get 6 feet from the rim and then I got to do something so I don't draw a charge. He can get all the way there. He can finish when he gets there. He draws fouls fairly well. He gets to the line quite a bit. He passes pretty well from that spot. He's similar to Trey McGowan's, which means that maybe you can use them together and you can't really favor defensively one side or the other because one guy's going at you one way and the other guy's going at you another way. Or you can bring this guy off the bench and he brings you the same kind of energy that Trey McGowan's was bringing. And so I think that's the addition or that's the piece that they get here. They get a good score. The ball's not going to – now, Teddy Allen was a scorer, but I don't think the ball's going to stop the way it did with Teddy. So Teddy's – and I like Teddy Allen, but when Teddy got the ball stopped because it took Teddy time, like many, many seconds to set up the move that he was going to make to try to score. Like he had to back guys in. He had to go – he had to feint here. He had to feint there. He had to go up and under and then over and then shoot and then hit a – then hit like a little 6 foot runner and all that stuff took time. And so if he missed, you know, it was a defensive rebound because everybody was kind of ready to go back the other way because everybody's kind of standing. With this guy, he doesn't pick up his dribble. He's not going to back people in. He's not an NBA guard backing somebody down in 1996. He wants to get all the way to the rim and he wants to play fast. So well, I think it's a good pickup.
And that's what I was going to ask you is you look at kind of the dominant scorers on Nebraska's first two teams under Hoiberg with Cam Mack and then Teddy Allen, both of those players have departed. It felt like in some ways when those players weren't in, the ball sharing was better. The scoring ecosystem was closer to what Hoiberg had at Iowa State. So I guess I'm curious, like, is this that again, or is Verge, has he shown more of an ability to be a facilitator as well? Do you feel like he's going to fit into that ecosystem as opposed to kind of dominating it maybe the way that those previous players have?
He did. When he got the ball, he did shoot quite a bit at Arizona State. I think that's a reasonable point. I do think that Cam Mack had some positive qualities to his game that still could have helped Nebraska last year if Cam was on board with doing the things that the coaches wanted him to do. Teddy, I think, was a relatively good teammate who nevertheless just played his own game. I think this guy is more of he probably won't average 14 a game. He's probably going to be more, you know, the 9, 10, 11 area. He can probably give you something defensively, and he's part of a whole. He does make an interesting competition back there because when it was Delano Banton, Trey McGowan's, Kobe Webster, and Karan McPherson, who's a freshman and needs a little bit of time, I think you're getting all different things there, right? I mean, Kobe Webster and Delano Banton were not the same player. Webster has become a pretty good three-point shooter. He was 38%. He was about 44%, I think, by the end of the year, if you look at those last six or seven games. So Kobe had begun to hit that developmental track that the coaches wanted from him. Like, we want you to shoot threes. We want you to be a spot shooter. We want you to stretch, you know, the defense. And he was doing those things. Banton, you know, was Banton. And then McGowan's is, let's get down Broadway and get to the hoop and finish hard and draw fouls and be athletic and all those things. Verge is closer to McGowan's. And by proxy, he's a little bit closer to Webster. Banton was his own kind of unique player. So I'll be curious to see how it works. Again, there's things about Delano Banton that I really like. He was good in a two-man game at times. He'd come off a pick and he could throw a pass that had some touch on it and was higher than the regular throw to a low post guy. And I think if he and Eduardo Andre had worked together for a whole off season and then went into next season and had really worked on that, they might've been able to connect on that kind of stuff like two or three times a game, because I like Andre's game a lot, but they can still do a lot of those things with shorter guards. And so I think it's going to be a net positive. This is a program, if you look at their non-conference schedule, which was released while I was also on vacation, this is a program that I think can win 8 or 9 non-conference games right off the bat. It's not a hard schedule. We have to be honest about that. It's pretty soft. It is. It just is. Their hardest game on that whole slate is probably Auburn in Atlanta. And then North Carolina State on the road. And then Creighton. We don't know what Creighton is. Creighton is going to be a brand new basketball team. They lost everything. Zagorowski gone. Ballack gone. Bishop gone. Mahoney gone. Jefferson gone. The whole team is kind of brand new. Now, they're talented as hell, but we don't know what Creighton's going to be yet. We just don't know. And so you have to think Nebraska's favored in that game. It's going to be played in Lincoln in front of a full house early in the season. Creighton's going to be young and not sure of exactly what they are. You know, I'll take Nebraska there. So you're looking at 9 wins. And then you get into Big Ten play, and if you win 6 or 7 there, you're in the NIT. And so I think that's what I think they have a real chance of doing that. And I think Virg probably helps them with that, because there's a guy that on a night when McGowan's is in foul trouble, you bring this other guy in, he's very similar in his game, maybe even a little bit better score than McGowan's, and you don't miss a beat. You know? And when Teddy got in foul trouble, or when McGowan's got in foul, you didn't, there was no guarantee that Banton was going to pick up that scoring slack. It just, there right. just wasn't. And again, I like him. I think he could be a really interesting player in the NBA. But in the NBA, he will be surrounded by players who accentuate his skill set and are not, I mean, we have to be honest about where Nebraska's at. Eduardo Andre in 5 years could be an elite player. He is not, you know, an NBA player right now. So if you pair a Banton with a G League or an NBA League level post on a, you know, pick and rolls, Banton's going to get it done. He just doesn't have those. He doesn't have that, those complementary pieces yet with it at Nebraska. So that's what I think.
I like it. It's going to be
recruiting
fun.
Wise. This is a big month. So we'll talk about this really quickly. Recruiting is a big month in July. They go out and they do a lot of their recruiting this month, where they go around to tournaments. This is true in women's basketball as well. Fred Hoiberg and Armon Gates and Doc Sadler will be everywhere. Matt Abdelmassi is sort of recovering from a surgery, so he's not going to be out on the road. Fred and hit that crew will be out. They'll hit all kinds of tournaments. There's a big one coming to Omaha and Council Bluffs next weekend. So I wouldn't be surprised if Nebraska's coaching staff is to some degree at that. You'll have some targets who come in actually for that. So that'll be a big deal for these guys. We'll just have to see. Isaac Trout is really high on their list of guys that they absolutely want to get. They don't necessarily have, you know, 7 spots open for next class because they have a lot of youth in their program. And even though they have turnover, you know, they're not necessarily going to have these spots available in October. So I think they may not sign a bunch of guys right off the bat. Trout is a big priority. Isaac Trout's a hell of a player, and I think Nebraska would love to have him. So I think they've done a good job of recruiting him. I think Creighton's doing a hard job of recruiting him too. Creighton wants him pretty badly. And then Oklahoma wants him, in North Carolina and some other schools do as well. Kaisei Tominaga is part of the Olympics, which is really cool. He's part of Japan's 3-on-3 team. So he'd be the guy that is shooting the 3-point shot oftentimes, or is it 2? I think it's 2-point in 3-on-3.
1 and 2.
So that'll be fun to watch. He'll obviously join the team later. His role is pretty clear on the team. I mean, you kind of know what he's going to be. You obviously want to get him here and see what he can do defensively, but he's out there to hit a couple of 3-pointers a game and knock down perimeter shots. Yeah, that's kind of where it's at. I mean, I think their program trajectory is pretty good right now. I think they've set themselves up to have a pretty good team this year. Have to figure out some chemistry elements in the backcourt, but I think their front court is going to be sneaky good. I really do. I think Andre's probably going to come along and be in 20. And this is based on things I've heard and just, I think Andre could be a 7 and 4 post this year, 7 points, 4 rebounds, a block. I think Derek Walker can give you kind of what he gave you last year, you know, 9 and 5, somewhere in there. And then you add whatever Kohanens can do. Hard to say, but he'll play. And then Breidenbach, who they love as a passer and a lot of other things. So I think their front court could be sneaky good next year, sneaky competitive. And their backcourt should be good. And then their wings should be outstanding. The talent on the wings is outstanding. Latmane's a talented guy. Bryce McGowan's is a talented guy. Keon Edwards at 6'7" is a talented guy. These are good players. So they should be pretty good. They should be. Got to do it on the court, but they should be pretty good. Let's talk some baseball. Big weekend for Nebraska baseball. Huge.
Yes, it is huge. It's a 20-round draft this year, which is up from 5 last year in the pandemic, and forever it's been 40 rounds. So it's still half of what it has traditionally been over the years. There's one thing we know about the draft this week, and that's that Spencer Schwellenbach is going to be a high draft pick. He could be Nebraska's highest draft pick in the Big Ten era if he goes in the first round or early in the second round. Ryan Bolt, an outfielder from 2016, has that honor right now. He went pick 53, I think it was, back in the day. So, you know, that's the one thing that we know. Schwellenbach, he actually has 2 more years of college eligibility, but he's going to make a lot of money in the pros. Really, the question with him is, will it be as a pitcher, as a shortstop, or as both? And that's going to depend on which team takes him and how they project him, because a lot of teams have seen him different ways. So that's he'll be the first guy to go. That could happen Sunday night in the first round, or probably more likely Monday afternoon in the second round. Beyond that, though, I really, you know, people have asked me, how do I think Nebraska baseball is going to do next year? And I think a lot of that's going to depend on how things go this weekend. I mean, Cade Povich has been their Friday night guy. I think he's a 50-50 proposition to be drafted and to potentially leave. What's interesting about him is that he has 2 more years of college eligibility as well. And so typically, if somebody wants to go pro and they feel strongly about it, they can do that with 1 year of eligibility left. So they have some bargaining power in the negotiations. Because of the pandemic year, Povich can actually come back next year, improve his stock, and still have that leverage. So I personally feel like he'll be back next year, but it's going to be interesting. Just takes one team to believe in you. And so, you know,
what does believe in you mean to you? Like what numerical number is that? What round, what pick, or is it just money?
Well, I mean, it's different for everybody, whatever your standard is. But I think what Nebraska coaches tell their players that makes a lot of sense is don't get caught up in the dream, because these guys on the pro side see this as a business. So if a team isn't investing in you, whether that's draft capital or what you would consider to be a good signing bonus, then don't go, because they haven't invested in you well enough. And if they stay, you know, the pitch is if you stay at Nebraska, they will develop you into a better player that then will get that investment from teams. So they caution their guys, you know, if you're getting taken in the 17th round, you can be signed for $40,000. Like, yeah, you'd be a pro technically, and that's a dream achieved, but teams didn't put much into you. And so they won't hesitate from moving on from you if things don't work out. So I think that's kind of where that goes. I know education is important for his family and for Cade himself at Nebraska. So it feels to me like he might be back for another year, but we'll see. The other current player who is really interesting is Jackson Hallmark. He's a guy who got his degree in May. He was the center fielder for them all year. As I was looking back on some of the numbers from the years, I was surprised to see that he actually led Nebraska in home runs this year. I mean, he was a guy who kind of told me during the year, like, yeah, I thought I was when I began college, I was under the delusion that I was a home run hitter. And under Will Bolt has become a really quality bunter, stolen base threat, things like that. But he actually had some power too. And he was right up there in average. He hit well above 300. So he's a guy, I wonder, you know, will he get drafted? And if he doesn't, he still, I think, could go kind of that Aaron Polinsky route from last year where, you know, he could say, hey, I've been here for 4 years. I feel like I've done what I can here, and now it's time to hit the pro ranks. To me, if anybody else other than Schwellenbach goes, I would feel like it might be Hallmark. As a guy who just has done a lot here, it feels like he might be ready for that jump. Obviously, Nebraska would love to have him back for one more year, and he'd be a staple in their outfield at a position in the outfield that would be totally starting over if he doesn't come back. But we'll see with him. And then, you know, for the first time in 4 or 5 years now, Nebraska has to watch how some of its recruits do as well. I mean, Drew Christo from Elkhorn, the right-handed pitcher, and then Chase Mason, an outfielder and right-handed pitcher from South Dakota, would be the top two guys. And they both participated in the MLB pre-draft combine in North Carolina last month. And they only invite about 200 college or high school prospects to that event. So those are two other guys to watch. And they both, similar to, you know, Povich and Hallmark, they have certain numbers financially in mind that teams are going to have to hit. And if they don't hit that, then you might not see them get drafted at all. I mean, Spencer Schwellenbach was a good example of that 3 years ago out of Michigan. He had a certain standard. I think it was in the top five or somewhere in that range. He wasn't taken in that range. And then eventually a team took a flyer on them, like the 33rd round or something like that. So that's something to keep in mind with Christo and Mason, is if they don't get drafted or if they go late, that's not necessarily a reflection of their actual talent. It's just that teams understand that they have a small chance of getting them if they don't pay them, you know, a high-end signing bonus type of money. So, you know, if a guy like Christo and Mason both make it, I mean, those are guys that can contribute right away next year, just like Bryce Matthews and Max Anderson did this year for Nebraska. Christo, you know, he could be right in the rotation mix right away. Chase Mason, as I said, outfield is totally starting over. He has the athletic ability, both in speed and power, to be, an impact bat for Nebraska pretty quickly. And he's a guy who is a multi-sport athlete who is really raw. And you put him in with those coaches, Will Bolton, that staff, and they can develop that into a more refined approach. I mean, that's a guy who could be a really high pick in 3 years. So I guess when I look at it overall, those are the four guys that really will shape what Nebraska can be next year. And you have other guys too, who will probably sign as undrafted free agents, Luke Roskam, Chance Roach, whose eligibility has expired. But those four guys are really the ones to me that if you get them back next year and you bring in the rest of that recruiting class, and maybe you add a transfer or two, I think Nebraska's drop off with losing Schwellenbach probably won't be nearly as steep as what it might seem.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think many years ago, a guy like Roach might have been more palatable because he's really good at getting outs, which is kind of the point, right?
Yeah.
But I think the thought process is today, the way these guys lift and the way these guys swing and what they're swinging to do, Chance Roach's offerings will be knocked out of the park from a lot of different angles. Whereas in college, maybe he could get away with a pitch, you know, turning into a ground ball in Major League Baseball, which I find fascinating to watch these at-bats anymore. These guys can hit home runs from almost anywhere. Like, it doesn't have to be the fat, you know, belt high cheese. It can be anywhere. Like, it can be anywhere in the strike zone and actually out of the strike zone too. They're so strong. They're so fit and they're so big that it's just easy for them to muscle the ball wherever it needs to go.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, what Roach can do is refine that sinker ball a little bit more because, you know, if everybody's doing one thing and that's getting the strikeout as a pitcher, mid-90s, power fastball sort of deals, like, it's not the worst thing in the world to kind of go the other way. And if you can generate some soft contact and get some quick outs that way, there's value in that. It doesn't mean you probably don't have the potential to be an ace, but you can make a living in pro ball.
No question.
Getting some ground balls, keeping your defense on your toes and that sort of thing. So that to me is the thing. Like, he's not going to overpower a lot of guys, but he put it well when I talked to him a month or so ago, saying he wants to be that guy who a batter makes an out and says, how did I not hit that out of the park against that guy? Mm-hmm. How did that not happen? How did I just, you know, get on top of that thing and ground it or roll over to second base or whatever? So I think he could have a pro career. Again, he's an older guy. He doesn't have any eligibility left. So the odds of him getting drafted are almost none, but I do think he'll sign with somebody. And, you know, you never know, a guy who has, again, a different sort of approach than a lot of other prospects. Sometimes those guys work out too.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I think he's got a shot. I just wonder if major league teams will take a chance on him, you know, that this somebody will give him an opportunity. He strikes me as the kind of guy that's going to get up to AAA and then it's just going to be a battle.
Maybe. Yeah.
A battle to get to the big club, because there's just a sense of, look, if you know, this guy's going to hit it out no matter where you throw it. So you have to be able to throw it really hard to get it by him, or otherwise he'll just knock it out. What are we missing? Anything with NIL that jumped out at you? Adrian Martinez signed a kind of a neat deal with a degree deodorant this week. He'll, you know, maybe share some of his life story, which we're familiar with. He was one of 14 athletes to do that. That's the biggest deal so far, right? Ben Stille and JoJo Doman are holding a camp. That'll bring them a little bit of money. They're going to give some of that to the food bank. Salute to them on that. Food bank's a great operation here in Lincoln.
A lot of runs.
Pretty ads. Modest to start, to be very honest with you.
A lot of runs of ads, a lot of GoPuff sponsored posts.
Yeah. I don't know what GoPuff is.
I didn't either.
I call me a moron. If you're listening to the podcast and you knew what GoPuff was and you knew all the ins and outs of GoPuff, congratulations. You're an expert. I did not know what that is. And I know what TikTok is. I mean, my daughter's on TikTok. I have a 13-year-old daughter, so I'm not clueless, but I didn't know. I've never heard of GoPuff. Anyway, they all have. Now you have one athlete, Casey Rogers, who's part of Barstool. Now, what is that? I don't even know what that is. Like, okay, so he's a Barstool athlete. What does that mean exactly? He hawks, you know, he eats pizza with Dave Portnoy. Like, what does he do?
I have no idea. I know Jackson Hallmark is too on the baseball team. I guess you can apply to be a Barstool athlete. I have no idea. I know it's a popular thing among a lot of college.
Oh, yeah.
Student athletes.
A lot of student athletes are, you know, interested in Barstool.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you make money doing it. See, and you and I have talked about this a couple of times, and your NIL story last week did a great job of laying all this out. I'm still a little dubious as to like how over time you're going to make the kind of money. Like companies are going to be like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to give you this money. We have no idea whether this is going to get us more traffic or not, but we're going to give it to you. Like, I could see GoPuff doing that, because you can kind of – GoPuff makes sense on Twitter, but I don't know how somebody gives somebody money to, like, hey, well, you know, the local Chevy dealer, and then nobody buys more Chevys. So, like, why would you give it to them? And the theory is, like, well, if it's a booster, they just want to pay for it anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
Which, yeah, I mean, yeah, look at Miami, right? I mean, that owner of that gym down there paying every player essentially $500 a month to promote his gym.
But see, that might actually work. The guys show up at the gym, they're outside, they're signing autographs. Like that, a gym, I could see a gym, maybe. I'm surprised a gym has not done that in Lincoln. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, but not to that extent. Every player that wants in, I mean, you're talking tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like, mm-hmm. It is, you know, I think you're going to see a lot of that. It's not always about return on investment. It's about bringing the players in, or it's about just being associated with the brand. Like, I think you're going to see a lot of that too. People who want to have a Nebraska athlete associated with them for the novelty of it or for the status of it. Like, I think it's not always going to be about making money for some of these businesses too.
Yeah. That's possible. How long does that sustain? Like, how long do you want to be cool for? You know?
Yeah.
Because now this is just me talking. This isn't an informed scientific opinion. But in my experience, being able to know that you've done something covertly and that it's like a secret thing, and it gains you access to an sort of an inside club because you're paying people under the table, is more exciting than paying the money over the table to the extent where everybody knows what you're doing and people are like, really? Doesn't it seem more exciting to do the duffel bag and the briefcase? And I'm like, there's a certain level of spy intrigue to burner phones and stuff like that. Once you actually say, this is all legal, you can do it, go ahead. Does it have the same appeal?
Yeah, the taste of forbidden fruit, that sort of thing. I don't know. Like the Miami thing, the Miami example is interesting because like if you're a Miami fan and you have followed the team forever and you are obviously aware of the recruiting violations that have occurred, but you've been good and now they're not very good. So like how popular is that guy, that gym owner out there now, to the fan base at large, because that guy is ponying up X amount of dollars to these players to essentially to come in to pay. It's not pay to play, but it is, expense. How popular is that guy? Now he can come out there and say, look, I'm the godfather of Miami football. All these guys are coming out. I bequeath to you my wealth so we can have on-field success. Like, I don't know, in a sense, that guy's status has to be rising right up down there in Florida, doesn't it?
Sure. That's possible. That's possible. I agree. Like, again, I'm a counter. You know me well enough to know I'm often a contrarian thinker. Like, I would think that it would be much more attractive to be able to do this in a way when it was against the rules and it was a big secret and everybody who mattered knew, but, you know, versus now everybody knows.
But think about
it. Like, it's not a mystery. Like, it won't be a mystery. It's just going to be, this gym guy's paying him $500. Okay. Like, it won't be like, so because people lie, Evan. People lie.
But think how many people out there, too, are like.
Not only that, people are already lying in the NILR. Like, one thing people can expect is payouts will be exaggerated. They will lie. I got $10,000 to do this. No, you didn't. You're lying. I'm not speaking of any specific person, but we're both men, right? We know people exaggerate.
Sure.
People will lie. They'll just, well, I got that. No, you didn't. But that's okay. I can't prove it either way, but okay. Like, that will happen. It'll be part of this. It'll be baked into the cake. We heard something last week about how right after NL started, there was going to be a radio station that gave five players $25,000 each to show up on the radio each week. And I'm like, there's not going to be people that get you $125,000 worth of advertising based on that. Really? Maybe? I mean, I guess. So the way that'll work is an advertiser will pay for it, and then it'll go back to the radio station and become a neutral cost or whatever. But I'm like, that's a lot of money to pay somebody. So we'll see if it happens. You're going to hear rumors like that all the time. Oh, so-and-so got this much money. Oh, it's a $7 million deal, but actually it's only $1.2 million unless you hit the incentive. Like, this stuff will happen all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm here for it. I like it. It's fine. That's how people are. That's how we are in life. We talk crap at times. We exaggerate. It's okay. I'm looking forward to that. The tall fish tails. At least now they'll be out in the open and it won't be, I knew this person in the SEC paid $700,000 for a defensive lineman. No, he did not. That never happened. Cam Newton got like $250,000. I've heard those stories before. Oh, they paid him $700,000. I'm like, nobody paid a defensive lineman in the SEC $700,000. Move on. They got him a car. That's all. You know, like that kind of stuff. So we'll see.
It's true. The fact that we don't know adds to the mystique.
Sure.
Was it a car? Was it in a McDonald's bag? What, you know, how did they do it? All that.
I love this. It's fun. I like it. People are, you're going to hear stories and there's going to be people that are like, I don't make a dime. You could make the argument that the most gifted athlete on the face of the earth right now is playing Major League Baseball for the Angels. He's a pitcher. He's a hitter. And And he makes a lot of money because of his home country, Japan. But as an American athlete, he's not making $100 million in advertisements. He's not.
No, he's not.
He's not. The best player in the game is Mike Trout. And he's way down the list because it's just the way it works in team sports. Oftentimes there's a LeBron, there's a Durant. There might be a couple of international superstars in tennis or in track and field, but for the most part, it's team sports. You don't get that kind of notoriety.
Right.
It's the way it works. So there'll be athletes that make a decent chunk and there'll be athletes who don't. All right. Rant over.
Ah.
It's a nice little NIL video for our folks.
That'll work.
All right. So you're going to Colorado. Enjoy your time. I think by the time you get back, which will be what it'll be like next weekend,
yeah,
we'll have a podcast right before we go to Big Ten Media Days, which is the 23rd and the 22nd. Or 22nd and 23rd. Nebraska's on the 22nd. And we'll go from there.
Real Nebraska's quick, give me your three predicted Huskers at Big Ten Media Days.
Well, it's gotta be Adrian Martinez, right?
Yep.
Cam Taylor Britt.
He'd be good.
Who's the third one?
Doman would be good. JoJo Doman.
Could be Doman. Could be Austin Allen.
Could be Stilly.
Could be Stilly. Who else?
Could be Cam Jurgens, maybe.
You know who I'd send as that third guy? Samari Toure. That's who I'd send. Unless you want to send Doman, you know, you can send Doman as your, you know, your representative of the defense. Doman's a great quote. Doman will talk when he's back here, though, too. Toure would be interesting to send because if you want to send a message to the rest of the league of, hey, like, I was an FCS All-American and I went to Nebraska and we're going to be good this year, I think you send that guy.
Yeah, it'd be
if you want to send the message that your offense is going to be better than people think, you send a slot receiver who just joined your team and was an All-American in another spot and is planning on being a big, big-time player for you in 2021.
Yeah. Could be.
That's what I'd say.
I think the first two are slam dunks, Martinez and Taylor Britt. But
yep.
Third one, they have some options.
I'd go with Toure. That's who I would send. Mm-hmm. I would send – and that would surprise a lot of people. They're like, well, what are they sending that guy for? But – I think it would be an interesting pick because he can be the guy that's like the face of Nebraska football is not as bad as everybody thinks it is. And I know because I chose to join the team and I could have gone other places, but I went to Nebraska and here's why. If you want to play it like that.
I agree.
All right, man. Have a good vacation. We'll see you, you know, when we see you on the other side.
Can't wait. Thanks.
All right. You bet. For Sam, for Evan, I'm Sam. Thanks for the Pick Six podcast.